Hey guys, welcome back to Brand New Techish. Quick note, this episode was recorded last week before the live show, but it is a brand new episode, so no worries there. Thank you to everybody that came out to the live show. It was a really, really enjoyable night, and it was great seeing the Techish fans in the flesh. Without further ado, here's Michael and Abadesi with Brand New Techish.
Start with something a bit left field from the hip hop world.
Go on.
Because I've been watching Rhythm and
Flow. It's a good show, Netflix show with T.I., Cardi B, Chance the Rapper, basically like, you know, pop idol, American Idol, but for finding
slash
rap
star. X Factor.
Yeah.
Finding the next lyricist, rap genius.
Right.
I'm only one episode in, full disclosure.
And they had Nipsey Hussle in it as well, man. Rest in peace. He had a little cameo. Like, yeah.
I saw that. Gosh. Eerie.
Anyways, go on.
But anyway, interesting post from the Huffington Post that you sent to me.
Yeah.
That rapper T.I. proudly admitted on a podcast this week that he takes his daughter to the gynecologist every year to ensure she's still a virgin. Are you going to do that?
Of course not, man.
Are you going to do that?
But the thing is, a dude like T.I., I think...
He's been to prison.
It's not... Listen, what's that got to do with anything?
Because I'm saying maybe he's seen shit that he's now just like, I got to protect her from it.
I feel like dudes like T.I. basically have he's been about, let's say that, right? Sexually, he's probably been about. So he just has horrible karma and probably treated women terribly.
Right.
So he's terrified that his daughter will probably meet somebody like him.
Right.
So he just has this, it's horrible, man. It's really weird and it's borderline creepy.
I mean, she's 18 years old.
She's a grown woman, literally. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. I mean, what would you do if your pops did that?
I'd probably run away, honestly. Like, there's one thing to, like, feign your virginity for as long as possible, which, let's face it, most of our listeners have probably had to do with their family. Maybe even still are.
I'm still a virgin, mum.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I lost my virginity on my wedding night. Like, every good Nigerian and Filipino and Christian girl.
Absolutely.
In all seriousness, I feel like there have to be boundaries between parents and children. And that is such an invasion of privacy. I just don't think anyone's hymen should be inspected. Also, what does that say about the trust in their relationship? There's like some element of misogyny in that. You know what I mean? Like, if he had a son, I'm not sure what the medical equivalent would be, but assuming there was one, would he also take his son to the doctor to check it?
Of course not, because a man is, you know, it's seen as a symbol of pride. How many, like, how early you start sleeping around, whereas a woman, it's like, yo, you gotta make sure that you're virginal and, you know, you're untouched and rare. So yeah, it definitely is like an element of just misogyny completely. And it's so weird how he was so brazen with it. Like, he didn't say it with any shame. I heard a clip. He was like, yeah, man, you know, this is what I do. I'm thinking to myself, fam, like, it's one thing to do something so heinous. It's another thing to do it and say it like, on a public platform. So you know what? I was talking to a friend of mine actually on a separate but related point in that, like, there's a lot of celebrities that are now doing podcasts. And I'm like, to a certain extent...
Stop stealing my competition!
No, well, I don't give a damn about that. But first and foremost, I'm also thinking, is it even wise if you think about it? Like, because you make one misstatement on a podcast, all of a sudden you destroyed your brand.
Canceled.
Yeah, so it's like, why take that risk of going out there and speaking nonstop for hours at an end and risk losing everything? Like, to be honest, me and you, we don't have as much to lose as T.I. We've got some things to lose, but end of the day, like, when you're already, you know, rich, well, I guess you can make the argument that a rich person can just be like, I'm always going to be rich, so F you guys.
It doesn't matter, yeah.
You can't cancel me, right?
I totally hear what you're saying, though. You know, without putting a bit of thought and deliberation into the narratives they want to portray in the podcast studio, there is a risk they can do something that works against their brand. But I feel like someone like T.I., with all of the music that he's made and all of the experiences that he's done, I don't feel like this is off-brand for him.
Right.
And honestly, I feel like a lot of T.I.'s core fans
might agree
with him.
That's true. That's another thing. When you see things on Twitter bubbling up, oh my God, I can't believe this cancel culture, there is still large swaths of the population that are not on Twitter and are probably seeing that and thinking, yeah, that's what I'm doing too. If I could do that too, I would do that too. So maybe you're right. The kind of the threat of cancellation, and we talked about it last week, how it always ends up being BS. Look at Kanye, he's thriving better than ever financially. So I don't know. But yeah, nah, T.I., man, that's creepy. Do better. Fix up.
While we stick on celebrity news, I wanted to get your views on the new relationship status that's sweeping the millennial culture.
Right.
It's called self-partnered.
What's that?
So Emma Watson, who you might know as Hermione.
Yeah,
the Harry Potter film franchise.
Harry Potter.
said in a recent Vogue interview that she's very happy being single.
Right.
And she calls it being self-partnered. What are your thoughts?
I think that is ridiculous because it's still within the paradigm of a relationship. Like, if you're happy and single, why would you need to even use the word like partnered? Partnered already indicates
like
you're in the ballpark and paradigm of a relationship, whereas somebody who is just like, I'm on myself, I'm with myself, I'm happy with myself, you wouldn't even use the word partnered or self-partnered or even think of putting a label on it. So I call BS on it. You know what? It doesn't beat my favorite new word,
which is
in the relationship paradigm, which I heard, I think, last year, micro-cheating.
Silicon Valley in the bedroom.
No, because you know, for example, like
micro. Gosh, so you're familiar with race of people,
humanity, throw it in the bin.
Literally.
No, but hold on, listen to this though. Okay. I'll break it down to you. So you've heard of microaggression, right? You've heard the concept of microaggression, something that someone might say to you that is aggressive, but it's not necessarily a physical form of aggression. It might be like, oh, like, where are you from? Where are you really from? That's a microaggression, right? So micro-cheating is things where you haven't cheated on your partner, right? You haven't kissed somebody, had sex with somebody, slept with somebody, but if your partner was in the room, they wouldn't like it, right? So you might so you might talk to somebody for an hour and not bring up the fact that you're in a relationship,
yeah,
right? Or, you know, you've, so many examples where you...
Is that micro-cheating in your book?
So, you know what?
Because I have done a lot of that.
But I'm not saying that you have to bring it up in every situation forcefully, okay. But what I'm saying, but what I mean is... Let's say you could tell somebody is interested in you and they're obviously putting like, you know, moves on you and you just entertain it and you're just like, yeah, you know, whatever, right? Yeah. What are we saying? Yeah, I know, you know, I'm just
flicking
out here.
My hair.
I'm just out here, you know what I mean? I'm not attached, right? So in that situation, you haven't cheated on anybody. Nothing
Michael's
happened.
Flirt game is hilarious.
I haven't been single in a long time. Allow me. Yeah, I'm just out here, you know what I'm saying? I'm doing my thing, like, so hold on. When I heard that, me and my friends were like, no, that's ridiculous. We laughed about it. But then I thought about it. I was like, yeah, like, to be honest, there is an element where there's a gray area where before you cheat on somebody, there is many patterns of behaviors that you might do before the actual act might happen. You might be on a dating app, you know, you might be on Bumble Biz, which isn't the Bumble business, like, you know what I'm saying? And you might just be like, let me just swipe on, like, I downloaded Bumble Biz, actually, pardon me, to actually check it out. And I was like, I'm deleting this because it's too datey.
Same.
Like, yeah, I was like, this is too datey. And if I stayed on this app, it would be like, to me, it's micro-cheating. So I prefer micro-cheating over self-partner, that's for damn sure. What's your favorite episode?
Micro-cheating. This
what are you adding to your lexicon? Quicker. Self-partnering or micro-cheating?
Self-partnering.
Self-partnering more than micro-cheating?
Yeah.
Oh, my days.
Yeah.
I feel like you're a
micro-cheating. Micro-cheating sounds like it's just been invented by someone who like needs a new excuse to pick a fight.
As opposed to self-partnering. Self-partnering is not made up. I don't see you. I'm self-partnered.
Only
come
in the context. Conscious uncoupling.
That's worse, yeah.
No, but only in the context of like self-partnering being this idea of like, I'm single, but I'm not actively looking. Like, right. I'm just in a space right now where I'm happy with who I am and like, I'm not necessarily even sure, you know, I want to get married or like, or maybe I'm not even sure what kind of relationship I want or like who I want that relationship to be with, etc. I feel like it indicates the fact that our sense of what a woman is, particularly in this context of Emma Watson, is evolving. And I think that is a healthy thing. Because, you know, she...
Right.
Yeah. There was a time when if you're a 30-year-old woman, people were just like, oh, what are you going to do with your life? Always in the context of what relationship decision you're going to make.
Right.
So
don't get twisted. That's with dudes as well. Like, now that I'm in my 30s, a lot of my male friends are getting hit. Like, yo, where is she? Like, what are you doing? Are you in the closet? Like, and that's a rock. Because it's like, yo, a lot of people start looking at you like,
seriously,
yeah, are you in the closet? Like, you know what I'm saying? Do you not like, you know what I'm saying? What is your orientation? Because you haven't got no one right now.
That's
and you're
so, also, what if you are in the closet?
Exactly. But the people just, that's the kind of crazy questions people want to ask. And listen, in African culture, across the board, it's not, you know what I'm saying? That's a question that will come forth, right? What's wrong with you?
That's
like,
so
what's
true.
Wrong with you? Like, you know what I'm saying?
I got called an old maid.
Seriously?
Yeah, by my dad. I
swear
was so grateful. Yeah, seriously.
And then you got married straight away. Is that what happened? You were like, Ben, we gotta do something.
Literally, yeah. The pressure was on. No, I mean, no, that wasn't the reason, but just to that point.
Got you, right. To clarify. So the other question on relationships is, so recently Keanu Reeves came out and he was like, he brought out his partner. And everyone, I don't know, no one really knew who Keanu Reeves was dating. So he brought out somebody who was in their 40s. She has like silver hair. And everyone was like, yeah, go Keanu. She's actually somebody who's in your age range.
Wow. Relatively speaking. Keanu Reeves clapping
is,
that.
Yeah, exactly. Low expectations because Keanu Reeves is like 55 and his partner is right in her mid to late 40s.
46,
right. But you got to remember, they're comparing him to Leonardo DiCaprio, who is... consistently dating women in their early to mid 20s, and then as soon as they age out, he drops them and gets another young partner in, right? What do you think? Do you think that's a problem? Like, is it
of
a
course.
Problem that are large age gaps to you cause for concern? Large age gaps, 20-year age gaps, 30-year age gaps.
I'm going to put it like this, right? If they're both consenting and of legal age as individuals, to some degree, I don't really disagree with it. What I disagree with is the fact that it's acceptable, even expected, for men to be able to date women as young as they want.
Right.
As young as they want.
Right.
But there is no level of social acceptance mm-hmm. for the reverse of that. If I'm a 40-year-old woman and I start rocking around with my 20-year-old boyfriend, people are going to be like, oh, look at her. Oh, what's going on there? Oh, that's weird. Does he have a mommy problem? Mm. Does she have a baby problem? Blah, blah, blah. When it's the other way around, when there's a 40-year-old dude and a 20-year-old girl, people are like, oh my God, they're such a hot couple. Oh, he's still got it.
What would you do though if you saw an elderly gentleman in his 60s with a, you know, a late 20s partner? You wouldn't look at him funny style. You wouldn't be like, yeah.
I mean, to be honest, you're literally describing like my dad and
oh,
my stepmom. Yeah.
Rah,
like,
swear down.
He has been in relationships with women who are like way younger than him. And I don't think it's like that unusual. I really
it's
don't
very common,
think.
But as in, let's say.
So it's hard for me to judge it because I saw that.
Right. So to you, it was kind of.
But even now when I see it, I mean, I have friends who date people who are significantly younger than them. And it's only my guy friends. Like, I don't really have any female friends that have, like, been in long-term relationships with younger guys, but I have a lot of guy friends who've been in long-term relationships with younger girls. And I do think, you know, if I had to make broad strokes judgments about it, there's some kind of, like, patriarchal element at play.
Yeah.
Because it's just this, there's, like, a kind of, like, acceptance of the kind of, like, roles and, like, power dynamics that one should play. And,
right.
like, generally speaking, age does afford you experience and, like, maybe it also affords you more financial flexibility. And it's just likely to be the case that you might
that.
Be...
financial flexibility. Rich.
Okay. But, you know, it's probably going to be likely the case that if you are the older person in the relationship and you also happen to be the guy, you probably make more of the decisions in that relationship than the other person.
Right.
Broad strokes.
So I was listening to a while ago, Mona Chalabi, she is like a data journalist. Really cool. Check her out on Instagram.
Oh, I love her, yeah.
So she was basically railing against the fact that men always seem to date younger women and it's never really the reverse.
Agreed.
So she was on a podcast and talking about it with a co-host who also happened to be a woman, and the co-host kind of just cringed. She was like, but I don't want to date younger men. Like, I just don't, like, I cringe at the sheer thought at it, basically, right?
Right.
So I think we also have to be honest and say that a significant proportion on average, okay, I'm talking averages.
Sorry,
here.
But how old was the host?
So the host was in her 30s and
okay.
she was, hold on, let me finish. She was, yeah. They were talking about, okay, I'm not talking about large age gaps. I'm just talking about even a 30-year-old dating a 27-year-old and vice versa. And she was like, I wouldn't want to date somebody who was 27 just because she enjoys the fact that, I don't know what it is. Honestly, I can't speak for women in that sense, right? But there does seem to be, you know, on average, a greater desire for women to date men who are a bit older or at least on the same age, on par. And the great book, Dataclism, by the founder of OkCupid, he verifies that with the data. Like, women always look for, generally speaking, someone their own age or above.
But why?
That's the million-dollar question.
Because I don't think it would be hard to understand. I think we need to dig deeper into that. A lot of people will say things like, oh, men take longer to mature than women, right? And they'll
right.
be like, oh, that even happens in childhood. You can see that. Is that actually objectively, scientifically, data-drivenly true, or has patriarchy created a society in which women have to mature
right.
quicker than men?
And the inverse, and that men don't have to mature.
And men have the freedom to not be as mature.
Right. Yeah.
I wonder that. And I think when women say, you know, oh, I don't want to date a guy who is younger than me because that's really unappealing. You know, maybe they can't afford to pick up the bill if you're that kind of person and you're oriented that way. Or maybe they don't have enough experience to like engage in an intellectual debate with me. Whatever the reasons might be, I think if you ask a woman a bit older, yeah, so let's say like a 60-year-old woman, would you like to date a younger man? I'm going to be really crude now, but she might be looking at 60-year-old men and their physiques
yeah.
and their sexual performance and being like, to be honest, I wouldn't mind.
Yeah.
And let's face it, when 60-year-old men are looking around the room thinking about who they want their partner to be, they're looking at 60-year-old women and then they're thinking, I'd rather hook up with someone half your age.
Right. I recommend everybody read the book Dataclism, because he even shows that actually when women do hit an older age on average, that's when they start looking younger. So like, as when they start looking for younger
because
partners.
Men's
right. yeah, of course.
Equipment is
yeah,
faulty.
You know, everybody go vegan. Anyway. but you know what the thing is? It's a Pandora's box, and I explain why. Yeah. Once we start questioning people's romantic choices, we open up a can of worms in the sense that, okay, all of a sudden it's like, so why are people going for people of a certain height, of a certain ethnicity, of a certain thing? Mm-hmm. And it gets to the point where it's the one realm in the human society where we're still allowed, not even
mystery.
Allowed.
Mystery.
It's not even mystery. There's an element where people are completely allowed to be politically incorrect and they don't have to justify their choices. So if some people are going to be like, I will date somebody, I wouldn't date somebody who is not above 6 foot. I've heard that said a million times, or hasn't got an income of a certain amount, or is a certain ethnic background. Let's keep it 100. Mm-hmm. Do you see what I'm saying? So then all of a sudden, if we're saying, okay, but why is that? And have you been socialized? And we can do that. We can have that conversation. And it probably isn't, it might be a welcomed one, but at the same time, it's like, I don't think everybody is going to want that conversation.
True.
Because all of us are like, I just want what I want, and I don't want to have to justify it to anybody else. And as long as everyone's consenting, God bless. I listened to a really great podcast on the way here. It's the CEO of Airbnb, Brad Chesky, talking to Kara Swisher on Recode. So essentially the background is that there was unfortunately a really bad incident at an Airbnb listing where there was a house party and in the Bay Area, I think, and 5 people were shot and killed. So this has now forced Airbnb to essentially say, we're going to rethink our entire strategy around our listings. We're going to verify every single listing, which they hadn't done up until now, because even me from the outside, I would be like, I don't know how economically that's possible.
Yeah.
One, they do verify certain listings like the Lux and the Plus ones, but like,
Yeah.
The premium, but now they're going to be like, every single property is going to have to be, you know, verified. Someone's going to have a look, take the pictures, etc., etc. And then also on top of that now, they're going to have a helpline that's open at all times. And the reason why I tell everybody to kind of like listen to the podcast is because he explains the transition in thought for Airbnb across the years, and the transition in thought in Silicon Valley that hasn't really happened. So Airbnb is a marketplace, and he was saying that when we started off, a marketplace was kind of seen as, listen, we're not evolved, we're just here to facilitate a transaction between buyer and seller. Anything else, it's all on you. We've got a review system, it's all on you, right? And when the first few bad things started to happen, they said, like, it's not our fault, essentially, right? We'll try our best and we're not going to apologize. Then eventually he realized that, yo, like, we've got to kind of apologize. And like, then they put in things like 50k insurance on if anything does go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically was like, listen, when we did things where it was against all the advice that I was given as a young CEO by all the older people, that stuff built trust within the platform and it helped us grow sustainably. It wasn't growth at all costs, but it was sustainable growth. So it's a sad, unfortunate incident, but I want to commend them for at least trying to do the right thing, because I think so often, you know, growth at all costs has led to, you know, terrible consequences, and there's no adults really thinking what can go wrong. I know about house parties on Airbnb. They're popping off all the time. I'm surprised this hasn't happened earlier. I don't know. What do you think? You're an avid Airbnb user.
I was going to say, are you going to start using Airbnb now?
Hell no. I like my hotels, man. My 5-star hotels, bougie.
Okay.
No, I'm playing. No, I use Airbnb every now and then.
I love Airbnb. And Brian Chesky is genuinely one of my favorite tech CEOs. Seriously. Because I just feel...
It's not hard though, is it?
Ouch. Do you know what? That's so true. That is so true. I literally, that the list isn't long. No, to be fair, there's some good eggs out there. Let's not hate too much. But what I think is so cool about his approach is how like brutally authentic it is. I think it could just be because he is, you know, a millennial. He's from our generation. He's from our time. And he knows.
Age mates.
He knows what we care about. He knows that if a messed up thing happens and he puts out some faceless corporate press release,
right,
that is going to lose the trust of the community he's taken a decade to build.
Yeah.
So he has to put his face out there. And, you know, we mentioned on the podcast before, he made the decision to not only be CEO, but be head of community, because for him, he felt the two are inextricably linked. And so I think it's great that he's done that. And also to John Kara Swisher, because she will not hold back.
She's amazing.
I think like two things which are just kind of like concerning. One, it's a shame that this had to happen for them to feel it's imperative that they vet all properties.
Right.
Because at the same time, you know, if you are a community business and you care about the value that your users are getting out of it, you should care about that end to end. And I think, you know, like you said, you love going to hotels because you know that someone is literally inspecting that bed, turning it down before you go to sleep, leaving the chocolate on the pillow, checking the shower, the bathroom. You know, someone has... created a standard
and
of
a
quality.
Recourse. If anything goes wrong, I can just go down to the front desk and be like, what's going on? Where with Airbnb, it's like,
there's no,
who do I go to?
There's no feedback, website. Right? Like, you're there, there's no choice, boom.
Yeah.
So I think, like, I feel like they should have been doing this already, basically. And, like, it's good that they're doing it. And the second thing that I'll say is, in the product and newsletter this week, there was a theme around like surveillance or thinking about surveillance technology. And a survey found that 1 in 10 Airbnb customers had found hidden cameras in their property.
Wow. But listen, if it was your property, you might be doing the same thing. I'm keeping it for real.
I guess it depends where I'm putting the cameras.
Yeah, that's true.
Like,
yeah,
if I'm putting them in front of my safe because all my valuables are in there, fine. Yeah. If I'm placing it opposite the bed or in the shower or whatever nasty stuff, I don't know, then that's super messed up. So the final point I want to make on this is Airbnb, great that you're doing checks. You probably should have been doing them for longer. And can you be scanning for hidden cameras while you are doing these quality checks?
It'd be interesting to see how it affects their, you know, their bottom line, because they're going to IPO soon and they're going to have to file, you know, things. So like, is all of this, you know,
unit economics going to be changed?
Yeah. The way he was explaining it is that it's not going to be easy, and they're going to have to figure out a clever way. It could be something as simple as like mystery shoppers, and then you might get like a discount for future, you know, your own visits, whatever. So, but I think it's about time. I think the whole concept now of a marketplace where it's a free-for-all, I think it's dead and buried now.
So dangerous. I mean, this is how Groupon got, you know, so messed up while I was working there. Like, we scaled too quickly, and then we just weren't vetting people well enough, and then we were creating a horrible customer experience. And I think, I mean, every now and then BuzzFeed or someone will do an article about like, oh, look at this shitty Airbnb listing. And it'll be like, hey, sleep in like my trunk of my car. Here's a pillow. And we all laugh about it, but 5 people are dead.
Yeah, it's not a joke. But yeah, let's see how it plays out when they IPO in the near future.
I'll invest, not going to lie.
Okay, all right, I bet the investor. By the way, we are not financial advisors. Please don't take anything we say too seriously, please.
Also, I'm not investing yet.
Live show coming up. We've got other things that we're
selling. Live show.
Yeah, I mean, the tickets probably will be gone by now, but I just want to say, like, whenever your friend is doing something, please don't ask them for discounts. Please don't ask them, yo, where's mine? Please don't say to them, yo,
sorry, brother, Michael.
Can you just bring me in? Like, can I come for free? I'm like, bro, like, if you're going to go to the Apple store, to the next store, if you're going to go to Selfridges, if you're going to go to whatever, you know, bougie place and pay full price and not even try to haggle, then don't haggle with your friend who's trying to do a small business. Like, please don't do that. You know what I'm saying? If you don't want to support the product, I'd rather you not support. That's the honest to God truth. Just in general, like, right? And I think we've got to shift the culture in that sense. Like, it reminds me, a friend of mine, we went to Uganda, and he was trying to argue with the cabman for like over $1. And I just said to him, I was like, bro, go haggle with your oppressor. Don't come to Africa and start haggling. Like, over $1, like, but you don't want to haggle. You know what I'm saying? Don't want to haggle when we're in the Western society. Like,
so I just love that.
Yeah, like, just go haggle with your oppressor. Why are you trying to haggle with the guy who's most powerless in a different situation? So, and it's this mindset of like, oh, if it's a small enterprise, that means I have more, you know, ability to kind of negotiate rare. But I'm just like, why? Like,
to me, honestly, I find that shit very rude and offensive. Right. I find that, like, I will be blunt. If someone, first of all, no one would ask me that.
Yeah.
Because they know.
Not to mess with you like
they
that.
They know not to mess with me. I'll come for them. But in all seriousness, we have to walk the walk as well as talk the talk. And there's no point in saying you support Black-owned businesses, you're doing it for the culture, whatever, if you're coming up to Black business owners and asking for freebies.
That's literally it. Yeah, that's literally it. Like, don't tweet the marathon continues, don't tweet for the culture, don't tweet.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah, you're going to be like, yo, can I get a discount? Like, I get it if you're selling a £500 product or a $500 product, but if someone's selling like a $15 ticket or a £20 t-shirt or a $20 t-shirt, just like, come on.
So what we were saying before the show started was there is a large distance between people's mouths and their wallets.
100%.
People put their mouth out there.
Yeah.
Ask them to bring the wallet. It's
gone. Head scratch time.
It's gone.
But that's a lesson as if you're an entrepreneur and you're like, I've got this product, I'm going to go around and ask people, would they buy it? Would they support it? Right. More times than not, they're going to tell you, yeah. Especially if they love you, you know, your friends and family. But it's very different when you're like, I've got the product ready. Do you want to buy it now? All of a sudden, the tone will change in it. So that's when you know whether you've actually got something. If people are willing to give you the money, even if it's a prototype, even if it's an early stage product, then you've got something. If people are just saying they're going to give you money, it means nothing. It's meaningless.
That's it for this week. Hope you enjoyed that episode, as always. Remember, guys, Techish is on Patreon, and we'd love your support. Just search Techish on Patreon or patreon.com/techish. Peace.